and the Fight Nerd Radio.
This is the Fight Professor, Stephen Quadros, and you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
This is Danny the Upgrade, Lovenstar, and you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
This is Martin Cannon. You're watching the FightNerd.com. This is Nathan Africa Tour, and you just got school from the Fight Nerd.
See it? What is it? The game we saw, we kicked its ass.
Not quite live from New York. You're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
Hey, this is the Fight Nerd, and welcome to another episode of Fight Nerd Radio. Today is October 6, 2009, and the Dream Featherweight Grand Prix is over, and the Super Hulk Tournament is headed to a thrilling, well, maybe not so thrilling, but at least anything, a conclusion. We're going to talk about that event, plus some other news. Later in the show, we're also going to speak with Enrique Rubalcava from Jack's Pacific about the soon-to-be-released first wave of UFC action figures. We're going to have a lot of very exclusive news in that interview. And then we're going to be speaking with one of the biggest legends in mixed martial arts, Ultimate Champion, UFC 5 Tournament Champion, UFC Super Fight Champion, and so many other belts, Dan the Beast Severn. So stay tuned for that. Now, before I go any further, I just want to thank my sponsors, and they are the Mixed Martial Arts World Expo at MMAWorldExpo.com, BrawlandMall.tv, FindMMAGym.com, and HoodlumFightGear.com. Go to File, click Open in New Window, and type in one of those names right now to make my sponsors very happy. But make sure you don't click off my show just yet. I also want to thank Chad Wright and Ian Stroud on this episode before we get too deep into it. I was a guest on their live radio show, which is the Beatdown Fight Club, over on Blog Talk Radio a few days ago. It's my first time being a guest on a live radio show. It's a very different experience from what I'm used to being interviewed by other shows. And we talked about a lot of cool stuff, including the Kimbo Slice vs. Roy Nelson fight, Rampage Retirement, my start in mixed martial arts and journalism, and some other really fun stuff. So, you know, I think it's a pretty informative interview, and Chad and Ian are both very laid-back, cool dudes, so it was a pretty fun time. And if you want to hear it, you can listen to it on thefightnerd.com as well, in the newly added Nerd Stuff section. So take a listen to that whenever you get a chance. So, Dream 11 was last night at the Yokohama Arena in Japan, and it was an interesting card, to say the least. And by interesting, I mean a not very strong card. Bibiano Fernandez took the Dream Featherweight Grand Prix title by defeating Joe Warren in a controversial fashion, which we're going to talk about, and then Hiroyuki Takaya by decision all in one night. Now, let's talk about that match of Joe Warren that I just mentioned, who was originally supposed to be the favorite to win this entire tournament. It was a short fight. Warren got some pretty big takedowns on Fernandez, despite his urge to constantly grab the ropes. And towards the end, Fernando cleverly set up an armbar on Warren, and this is where the strangeness began. As the armbar was applied, the ref stopped the fight, and at that point, Bibiano ran around like a lunatic, flipped off Warren, and fled to the backstage area like a coward. Now, the important question is, was there a tap, and if not, was the referee justified in stopping the fight? Further inspection of the vid says, kinda, sorta, maybe. Once the armbar was locked on, and it was on tight and fast, Warren at first grabbed Bibiano's leg as if he was gonna tap, but he didn't. Now, then the armbar continued towards the ground, and you could see Warren kind of softly, but very quickly, tapping with his fingers almost, on Bibiano's leg again. And this time the ref must have noticed this action, because it was enough to stop the fight. It was a weak-looking tap, but I don't know if he didn't tap, or was just using it to maybe fake something, or maybe he's just using it as an excuse that he didn't tap. But either way, I think the ref was probably pretty good in stopping that, because it was pretty tight. But then again, we've seen worse-looking submissions before from other fighters, so it's one of those tough decisions to make. I feel bad for the referee in this case. What I don't feel bad for is Bibiano's actions afterwards, which were just completely deplorable. He should have been fined or something for that reaction, basically flipping off the crowd, going up to first running away, coming back to talk to the referee. I guess he gave him the finger, no one's really sure yet, and then just leaping out of the ring and running right to the back. Takaya, on the other hand, had a much harder way to his final match. He earned a big TKO victory over Hideo Tokoro, where he caught him on the sweet spot in the second round of their fight, knocked him down, and then finished him off on the ground with some punches. And the final match to determine the champion between those two was pretty good. It was pretty back and forth, a very close decision, and it showed that Fernandez does have a lot of skill, but he's just a little immature still, I guess, at this point. So I look forward to seeing more of Fernandez in the future, and we haven't seen the last of Takaya, so we're going to see what happens from here on out in the Dream Featherweight division. The match that I wanted to see the most was the conclusion to the Shinya Aoki Hokkaim Hansen trilogy, and it was not really a very exciting affair either, until the last 10 seconds of the fight, pretty much. Shinya surprisingly managed to control Hansen for the duration of the fight and had his way with him, aside from an errant upkick, low blow. The finish came in the very end of the second round, as Shinya popped his hips up and latched onto a lightning-fast armbar to finish Hansen. Now, he had been working from that position for about 50 seconds already at that point, but wasn't able to finish. Hansen attempted to roll over, and then out of nowhere, Shinya just exploded and was able to tap out Hansen, which earned him the Dream Lightweight title and bring the title to Japan. The Super Hulk tournament continued, and that was also interesting. I'm using that word a lot because there's no other way to describe this kind of show. It wasn't very good. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't very good. So the Super Hulk tournament continued. Hong Man Choi was tapped out by Minimum Man in the second round by what else? Heel Hook, of course. Choi spent the first round sprawling from the takedowns of Minowa, until in the second when Minowa sat through and was able to take the back of Choi and then eventually get him to the guard and work for his signature leg lock. Of course, it was pretty much almost like a pressing match. You know, how many times has Minowa been able to continuously hit that heel hook in almost every match he's been in lately? It's kind of weird. It almost seems like it was predetermined to happen. The last giant in this tournament, Bob Sapp, was also handed defeat by Sokaju in an also pretty dull match that showed Sapp has still learned absolutely nothing about ground defense in his last few fights. Sapp had been shown recently training with Antonio McKee, and I don't know what McKee was showing him, because Sapp looked maybe even worse than he's looked in the past. It was a pretty pathetic fight with Sapp. If you haven't had a chance to watch the fight, you can see Sapp throw a lumbering left or right hand at Sokaju and just kind of grunting. It's terrible. So, you know, the less said about those fights, the better. This is going to lead us to Sokaju vs. Minowa in the finals of this extremely pointless tournament, which will probably be on the New Year's show, and I'm assuming we're going to inevitably see Minowa Man win against Sokaju by, what else? Heel hook again. Now let's talk about some of the mismatches on this card. Where do we even begin with that? You know, I mean, Dream is known, and a lot of the Japanese companies in general are known for doing their mismatches, and in this case, we had a few just plain stupid matches. Well, so let's start by talking about one of Japan's legends, Kazushi Sakuraba, coming in a last-minute fight, very last-minute notice, taking on Reuben Williams, a former boxer, and it was just, I don't even know where to begin on this, you know. Williams came in on super last-minute notice, and he's making his debut against Kazushi Sakuraba. What's wrong with that picture already? You've got a veteran who's been fighting for like 10, 15 years now against a guy making his debut in mixed martial arts. Granted, he is a boxer, so he's got experience in the ring, but not in mixed martial arts. And to go against somebody with the grappling credentials like Kazushi Sakuraba, what were the matchmakers thinking here? This was just a pathetic showing by Dream to get some star power on their card, much-needed star power. And Sakuraba made pretty much short work of Williams, winning by a signature Kimura in, like, I think 2.5 minutes, basically just toying with Williams for the entire match, even standing on his feet and just throwing kicks to keep him away. Tatsuya Kawajiri also had a relatively easy time with his opponent, Melkor Manabusin. Kawajiri has about 30 fights on his record, while Melkor has about 5. So this fight went about 7 minutes, I think, and it was just pretty much all Kawajiri all the way. He took his time, wasn't looking to hurt himself or do anything crazy, he just wanted to get a quick win without expending too much energy, and despite going 7 minutes still, he absorbed basically no damage, and Melkor just didn't look too good. But, you know, compared to somebody like Kawajiri, it's hard to look good against him. So I've just got to ask again, Dream, what is the point of this match? As if the Super Hulk tournament wasn't bad enough, now you've got these two random mismatches on the card? I don't even know what to say about that. Dream's in some trouble, hopefully he can get out of that ditch soon and move on and start putting some good cards together. Some other news this week, Mark Coleman has pulled out of his UFC 106 match against Tito Ortiz. Reportedly, Coleman has torn his MCL, but will be ready to fight again for UFC 108, and that this match is going to be postponed to the date of that event. Tito responded to this news by calling Mark Coleman, and I quote, a sissy, to which Coleman's managers responded by calling Tito, and I quote, a douchebag. At least this adds some fire to an otherwise pointless match, and I love the verbal name-calling that's going back and forth between these two legends in the sport. It's so super necessary to really, you know, hype this match up that none of us even care about in the first place. I do want to see Tito fight again, I suppose, and I wouldn't mind seeing Coleman fight again, but really, sissy, douchebag, do we need this? Some good news from the UFC, however, as UFC 105, which will be from Manchester, England, is going to be aired for free on Spike TV, which will be headlined by Randy Couture versus Brandon Vera. And that card actually looks pretty exciting so far, with a lot of younger names that's going to be fighting on the show. So we're going to be looking forward to that, and in the coming weeks we're going to talk some more about that show. Now, in a few weeks, the first wave of UFC action figures from Jack Specific are going to be hitting toy stores everywhere. And we spoke with Jeremy Padawar in the past, but now I want to get some more information, maybe some new news. So I decided it was time to talk toys once again. Joining me now is Enrique Ruvalcaba, who is the Director of Fight Brand Marketing for JAK Specific. Enrique, thanks for being here today.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Matt.
All right, now you guys are gearing up for Toy Fair. Where is that going to be exactly?
Toy Fair is going to be in Dallas this year. However, we are not going to go. So we are going to be here in Santa Monica, and for the first time we've done it this way. We're basically going to bring all the big buyers out to us and have them walk through the Santa Monica showroom. So it'll be here in Santa Monica for the first time.
Okay, interesting. Now, what are you guys going to be showing at this little exhibit you'll be doing?
Well, it's a trade show, so there's going to be some sneak previews of what we're going to be showing and selling next year, but also everything that's on sale this year. So we're going to have all of our action figures, and of course, you know, trade gets a little bit of exclusive preview, so they'll be able to see Wave 0, Wave 1, and Wave 2. Also, some of the other scales that we're doing for next year. I don't necessarily want to mention that, but there's going to be all kinds of blogs about it, so just, you know, keep in touch. Also, some playsets that we're doing, and basically everything that we're doing for next year.
Okay, very interesting. Can any of the Fight Nerd listeners get a preview of what you're going to be showing, or do we have to check out the show in person?
It'd be better. It's just a couple days away. If this was maybe 2 or 3 days ahead of time, I can give you a little bit, but I guess I can give you a couple of teasers. We are doing different scales, so as you walk through the show, you're going to see some different scales. I think those will be appealing to different consumers, and also some extensions of playsets and some feature-based playsets, so it's got some cool stuff coming out.
All right, sounds good. You've teased me far enough there. Now, can you run down the lineups you have for the first two waves? I know Wave 0 and Wave 1 are so far ready to go. Can you just run down who's going to be in those first lines?
Absolutely. So Wave 0, we wanted to do the big celebration of UFC 100. So the first two guys in that mix are going to be Brock Lesnar and Frank Mir. Also, we have Rashad Evans in there. In every assortment, we're going to throw in a legendary fighter, and then Wave 0 happens to be Royce Gracie. And then rounding out the rest is Keith Jardine, Houston Alexander, Kendall Grove, and the eighth guy is kind of a special guy. We're going to alternate between Pride and WEC. So for launch, we're doing WEC and we're doing Miguel Torres. So that's Wave 0. Wave 1, we've got Chuck Liddell, Anderson Silva, Forrest Griffin, Michael Bisping, Evan Tanner is the legend, Kevin Randleman will be the fighter from Pride, Jake Congo, and Mike Swick.
Okay, now, there's been some talk about the usual exclusives that Jax does, and in this case, one of your first exclusives is going to be something called the First 100, or One of 100. Can you explain what that special is exactly?
Yeah, so this is something that I saw another company do that I saw in a different way that I thought was really interesting. And what it is for those hardcore consumers who want something special out of the first wave, the first 100 figures of each guy in Wave 0 were stickered with First 100. And those then were inserted into random master cartons. So who knows where they're going to end up, but they're definitely going to be on shelf. Yeah, definitely going to sticker the first 100 of each guy in Wave 0. So there's 100 of those out there, and it's going to be tough to find. I'm trying to get my hands on some myself, but they should be really cool.
All right, now you mentioned Miguel Torres is going to be the WEC fighter in Wave 0, and Miguel is coming with the WEC belt. However, Brock is also in that lineup, and he is the current UFC champion. How come Brock is not coming with a heavyweight belt accessory, whereas Miguel Torres is actually coming with a championship belt accessory?
That's a good question, and we should have probably put a belt in with that Brock Lesnar figure. We want to save our accessories and kind of mix up what we do with one wave and another. So you're going to see that UFC belt come out later on. You know, we're picking. So one thing that I'd like to mention is for every figure that we're doing, we're actually going to sticker up in the top left corner where that fight is from. So if it was, you know, Brock Lesnar, I think it was not, although Brock Lesnar is in that mix, I don't think he was champion at the time we did his figure. I don't have that information on me, but I think it was his fight with Heath Herring, I don't remember which was the fight, but I think it was before he was champion. So anyway, we're definitely going to re-release Brock later on in our waves, and he's going to come with a belt, so look for that one as well.
Okay, now any people who have collected Jack specific figures know there's also a very special exclusive called the 1 of 500, which is a leather strap championship belt with a metal medallion. Are there any plans for making UFC action figures that have this 1 of 500 belt as well?
I think so. If I understood your question correctly, we did that in the past with WWE. Is that what you were saying?
Yes.
Yeah. We did that in the past as well, and every so often we threw in an actual belt, which was made out of metal as opposed to plastic. I think that's the one we're talking about. But there's all kinds of, I get a lot of questions about exclusives, and I always answer it kind of the same way. There's a lot of really cool stuff that we want to do. I'll just give you one right now that I think is really cool. If you guys don't think it's cool, just blog about it. Tell me that you don't like it. But we're gonna be introducing a John Fitch figure, and we're working on an Afro that he's gonna come with. So this exclusive information. I think it's the first time I've said this, but I think it's gonna be really cool. So that sort of thing, because during that fight, he took the Afro and put it on his head, and it was kind of a rare scene. But it's online; you can find it, and I think that would be a really cool accessory. So that's gonna be a chaser. So we're doing a lot of stuff like that. We'll do some gold belts. We'll do some. We're working with UFC on some memorabilia that we can insert, you know, in every random figure. There's a lot of cool things that we can do, and we're going to take advantage of all of that stuff.
Yeah, very cool, especially getting that Afro on John Fitch. I can't wait to see that. Now, as a fan, which fighter have you been most excited about signing to make a figure with?
You know, there's a lot of good ones, and it's funny how you have to be PC, you know, and I love, and it's not because I'm being PC. I actually am a big, huge UFC fan. And I love making all of these action figures. I can tell you that one of the most fun for me personally was working with Boss Rutten. And Boss Rutten is, I love the guy. He's a super charismatic guy, and I think he's going to make a great action figure. Interesting to note that his quads are so big that we had to pull a tool from a totally different figure to make him look right.
They're bigger than his head. It's crazy.
Caps, but he's one of my favorites. I think as far as a figure. Man, I'm giving away too much here. But, you know, there's a couple guys that we can do from some of the later Ultimate Fighter episodes, and I think you guys can probably figure out who that's going to be, but that's going to be a really cool figure.
Now, I mean, we can kind of change the question here now. Which fighter has been the most excited to have a figure made about himself?
All these guys react pretty well to their figures. And we've got another bit of inside scoop here. I don't know if it's actually published yet, but I think we're going to get it out today. Hoyce Gracie is going to be in our showroom on Friday, and he's really excited about his figures. He wants to see him. He's going to sign a bunch for the people in attendance. But everybody that we've shown their figures to has really liked them. I was particularly happy with Mike Swick's blog when he saw his figure. He put it out there, and it was kind of funny because I think it was Fitch who was coming by, and he kind of broke his figure. Anyway, it was a really funny blog, and he put it up on his site, and you could tell he was really excited about it. But all of these guys we're working with, especially some of the Legends guys, like I was talking to Don Fry the other day, and he's really excited about his figure. So I think in general, you know, just think about it from your point of view, right? If somebody made an action figure out of me, I'd be really happy. So that'll never happen, but, you know, it's really cool to think that these guys are having their own figures now.
And one day we'll get a Fight Nerd action figure, too, hopefully.
So, yeah, maybe.
So overall, you'd say that the fan reaction is pretty positive, as well as the fighter reaction so far.
So far, so good. Honestly, I want to do more. I want to be more involved with the fans, and I want to do more shows like yours, Matt. And I want to be out there and make sure that I'm hearing what everybody wants. You know, if you guys want more of the top fighters, or if you want more of the rare fighters, or if you want more accessory fighters, you know, I get a lot of questions about Dana White. When are we going to do a Dana White figure? Whatever you guys want is, you know, what we want to do. We want to be in touch with you guys. So far, the reaction has been great. And we just hit stores this week and last week, and the POS is showing that so far so good. You know, we're building it out, and again, I wanna do what you guys want, so let me know.
All right, last question here now. Does Jack still have the Rocky license, and if so, can we get a Drago and Brock Lesnar 2-pack?
A Drago and Brock Lesnar 2-pack, that is a cool idea. It'd be some interesting royalties to figure out there with the licensors. But we do have the Rocky license, and we did put it out, and that was a lot of fun, and there's a lot of fans out there. I've talked a lot about Rocky in the past on different shows. It was really fun. It was really cool to do that line, and I was a big fan of Rocky, especially Rocky IV. That was my favorite. So, yeah, it was really cool. Hopefully we'll have more opportunities like that in the future.
All right, hope so. Now, where can we check out the UFC action figures? They're in stores everywhere and websites, I imagine. Give us a rundown where we can go to buy these guys in person.
Yeah, if you want to go out there right now and look for those, you know, stickered first 100, you can go to Walmart and you can go to Toys R Us. They're at Toys R Us, and like I said, they're just getting out there now. They're kind of hard to find. You have to look around a little bit, and in the next couple weeks, they're going to be at Walmart. Just Walmart, anywhere else, and obviously they're online as well, too, on different sites. As far as information, you can go to our Facebook page. That's Jack's UFC. You can just search that in your Facebook page. You can also go to MMAFigs.com. There's one of our online partners. They have a lot of inside information that they put up. And, yeah, you can also go to Jack's.com. That site I don't think is launched, but in the next week or two it should be up.
All right, so in the meantime, whoever's listening out there, check out MMAFigs.com. You can get the latest up-to-date news on all figures, including Round 5 as well, and anything else that comes out. Enrique, thanks very much for your time today.
No problem, Matt. Thank you.
Enrique also wanted me to mention that in addition to the figures, there will be also kid-sized UFC, Pride, and WEC belts coming out as well. And also, there's going to be some different sizes of UFC cages, octagons. It's going to be a smaller size and a much, much bigger size. And also going to be some play sets, which I think they're going to be revealing at Toy Fair. Rumor has it we're going to be seeing possibly a Pride Fighting Championship stage and ring. But, you know, again, this isn't confirmed. This is hopeful thinking. This is the rumor that's going around. But we should know more after Toy Fair. Okay, so we're going to take a break. And when we return, we're going to be speaking with UFC legend and MMA veteran Dan the Beast Severn. This is a really good interview, so stick around for that. The Mixed Martial Arts World Expo is making its debut this October in New York City. With 80,000 square feet of exhibitors, including Everlast, Combat Sports, Zebra Mats, Throwdown, Knockout Athletics, and many more, plus seminars, panels, and demonstrations by some of the top names in mixed martial arts and competitive martial arts, including Judo Olympians Jimmy Pedro and Roddy Ferguson, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Wizards Marcelo Garcia and Vitor Shaolin Ribeiro, Olympic gold medalist and ATT boxing coach Howard Davis, and Muay Thai trainer to MMA's top stars, Phil Nurse. This is not going to be a show you want to miss. Small businesses can network with the big guns, and East Coast fans can get an inside look at the sport and the people within it. The Mixed Martial Arts World Expo is October 24th and 25th at the Jacob Javits Center in New York City. Tickets are just $20. Head over to MMAWorldExpo.com and register today. The MMA World Expo, New York City's first Mixed Martial Arts Expo. Don't miss it. And we're back on Fight Nerd Radio. Joining me now is a man who really needs no introduction. He is a legend in the sport with a record of 90 wins, 16 losses, 7 draws, UFC 5 tournament champion, ultimate champion, super fight champion. We can go on all day. But here's the man himself in person, Dan the Beast Severn. Dan, thanks for being here today.
Oh, thank you for having me, man.
So what's going on today? How's training going at your new gym?
Well, it's, I could say every day is a kind of a crazy day, to say the least. You know, a lot of people, they may know me through just mixed martial arts, or they might know me through the world of professional wrestling, but it's actually kind of a small element of what I'm all involved with. So I always tell people, if you really want to know the full meaning of what the beast is all about, go to the website at danseven.com, and you'll see all the different things. Otherwise, we would probably take up all of your time there just talking about all the various projects I'm working on.
Hey, so many fights to even go through. We're not even going to get started on that. We're going to talk about your most recent fight that you almost had. You were going to be fighting Dave Huckaba for the Gladiator Challenge heavyweight title, but he was stripped of the title. There's some controversy. Do you know what happened in that situation?
Well, I mean, I've heard two different stories. I mean, I've heard the story from the promoter, and then I heard stories from other people that were, I guess, I don't know if they're friends or acquaintances of Dave's. And so, to me, it's like somewhere in between, you probably have the truth. I was told that everything from maybe some financial differences to wasn't prepared. I don't know, like I said. So somewhere in between the two, you probably have the truth.
Are you still planning on fighting for that Gladiator Challenge, especially right now since it's vacant?
Well, I mean, it's, I guess I didn't really give thought on that in terms of, I stay rather busy. A number of promotions contact me on a regular basis. You know, I guess if you want to look at the more humorous point of reach, they contact me. I go, is there anyone that's even close to my age right now? I said, otherwise you need to start handicapping these matches here just a little bit before every 10 years I have to give up to the younger bucks. You got to give me a couple extra points or something like that. And they just start to laugh at me. And I go, are you still scared of people? I go, yeah, but the reality is probably time is marching on. And sooner or later, I'm not going to make myself available to these young bucks. But I definitely like knowing as much background about opponents.
Now you mentioned these young bucks. You've been a fighter who's been there since way back before, you know, when it was still single-digit UFCs. Did you ever think mixed martial arts would get this big?
If it survived. When I first saw it, I was like, this is incredible. You can do this in the United States. I thought it was phenomenal. I mean, I used to have an old VHS tape from the early UFC. I'd have some people come over, and I would just throw it in almost as an experiment to see how it was captivating. They'd be like, well, you know, Dan, I got to leave here in just a couple minutes, stuff like that. Oh, shoot, an hour and a half later, they'd still be sitting there on the couch, jumping up and down, trying to, you know, contort, either get out and escape from some kind of hold or be bobbing and weaving themselves. I mean, it was pretty comical to watch, you know, that same person who said they could only be there for those couple minutes and they're there so much time later. So I knew that if it could survive, that it would be a very attention-captivated type of to the audience.
And of course,
I don't think I did a very good explanation on there, right, nerd? But
that sounds good for me. I'll take it.
It definitely keeps people's. It draws people in. I think there's something about violence in general.
Definitely.
That intrigues people. When you look at kids, want to fight mixed on a playground. I mean, they all want to rush over to see what's happening. Every time people slow, when you see an accident, what do people do? They slow down to see what's happening. So I think it has all of those attractions. I mean, there's something about, boxing was a great vehicle that a lot of people want to watch it as that entertainment value. But now this is just taking boxing to the power 10 right now. It's just so much more. It gives you. It's just one element of these athletic contests.
I mean, if we take a little leap back all the way back to 94 at UFC 4, and I kind of think about the rules of MMA, how they've changed. I mean, what do you think about the current rules that we're using in mixed martial arts right now?
Well, I mean, it's as I said, you know, it had to change in order to survive in the first place. I like most rules. I think eventually you'll see that elbow taken away as well. I mean, it's a pretty devastating tool, especially the way that the rules have changed. It's what they construe as what is the back of the head. You know, before they said you couldn't hit, from basically the ear line back, and now that space has been reduced more and more. And I think they ruled it differently as to, the only thing you're not allowed to do is raise that elbow to the ceiling and straight down. And there's a lot of ways that you can just use that elbow to really hurt people. I mean, while they allow knees in a down position, I don't think anyone used them better than what I did. At the same token, did it break my heart when they took it away? No, because it was a tool that, it hurt a lot of people. So I think the elbow will eventually be taken away as well.
That's too bad, because, I mean, you know, back when UFC first started, it was, you know, there are no rules, there are no weight classes, according to Rich Goins. Now we've got lots of rules, lots of weight classes. And I want to ask you about these weight classes that we have now in the UFC and mixed martial arts. We have right now pretty much 5 or 7, if you want to take the lighter classes as well. There's about 5 or 7 weight classes in there. Are you a fan of these weight classes, and do you think that we need more or less?
Well, I think there should be a weight class, and I just think there should be just one more. I mean, yeah, you're probably just talking about just really the one major company, the UFC, where I think the lightest weight class, I think, is around that 150-pound weight class. There's a lot of other organizations that they recognize 135-pound weight class as well. And, I've had, I run my own fight company known as the Danger Zone, and there's still people that come up to like, man, I only weigh 125 pounds. I actually can lose the weight. I could be 115 pounds or something like that. I mean, it's just to get
below bantamweight even.
You know, to even 135 pounder, that's devastating, because these guys are coming down from that 150, 165 pound weight class. They're coming down to that 135. You know, especially if they are like a wrestler background, or something like that, that they're used to the weight reduction, and that's what it doesn't tax them the same way that someone that has never had to do weight reduction like that would mess with them probably mentally and physically.
That's true. There are a lot of smaller weight classes, especially in WEC. We have the bantamweights, featherweights. But there's also an issue that a lot of people have with the heavyweight division, and that it's a very wide division. Do you think there should be maybe a super heavyweight class?
Well, there is, and then a couple organizations actually have recognized the super heavyweight. They'll go up to heavyweight is from that 205 to that 265, and then there's a super heavyweight which goes beyond the 265 pound weight class.
You think we're ever going to see that in any Zuffa related organizations?
Yeah, I would not rule that out. I think you're going to see a few different changes that will probably take place, not just about the weight class alone, but I still think that somewhere down the road, you will see a master's division. I think that will happen in the next 3 to 5 years, because you'll have so many competitors that will be hitting that 40-plus year age area or more. And to see a 40-year-old competitor going against another 40-plus-year-old competitor, now that looks competitive. To throw that same 40-plus-year-old guy against, say, a 20-some-year-old guy, well, you're going to see the world's difference in skills and things of that nature. Now, there are exceptions, again, to all rules, but as a general whole, you'll see that. All sports pretty much have some type of a master division. And I think the inevitability is you will see that taking place with the MMA world.
Now, as a fan, which fighters do you like to watch that keep you inspired and keep you interested in the sport?
Well, I mean, it's like I don't watch a lot of television in the first place. I mean, but because I run MMA classes, I basically vicariously know what's all happening just by listening to them talk all the time. I mean, it's almost ridiculous to get me down to, oh, he's got a new tattoo, he's got this. I'm thinking, you guys sound like a bunch of women around the water cooler right now, talking about fashion statements and stuff like that. Who actually has tangible skills? Now, I like to watch the Ultimate Fighter show every now and then, not to watch the fights as much as trying to watch what they are doing training-wise. And some of the stuff I see, it's like right on the money, and then there's other stuff I see, I think they missed the boat altogether. And, so I'm looking at what's being taught. And, of course, and then I'm starting to see a lot of egotistical, trash-talking young fighters that I think they're trying to carve their niche any way they possibly can. And I don't exactly approve of some of the stuff what they're doing.
All right, now you mentioned you watch Ultimate Fighter to kind of look at some training methods, and you say some of them are not really right on. Which methods do you see that you don't really like or approve of as far as training?
Well, I mean, I just could say that. I mean, I think, well, folks, well, what they're teaching, I think that they're teaching, but, well, I guess just maybe clarify that just a little bit more. I don't see anyone that attacks the body the same way that, I mean, they all teach the mount. For example, they all teach the mount. And if you were to talk to almost any fighter, you would think that the mount is the greatest position in the world to be in. And it's not. You know, so that's one aspect, but I see almost everyone that teaches the mount. Now, I'll go through and I'll teach the mount as one of the things that you can do. But realize, in the mount position, you only have two weapons of choice. You have two hands. In the moment that bottom man moves at all, you will have to put one of those hands down in order to catch your balance, thus reducing you down to one element that you can utilize. Whereas in, say, the cross body or the cross mount position, you have four weapons to use. At any and all points, you will always have two weapons to utilize. So again, I strongly like the cross body, cross mount position as opposed to the mount. That's just one example, but then there's other things along there with it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that statement. I know a lot of other fighters out there also do. I mean, there's a lot more advantageous things you can do from crossbody. Now, I also want to ask you about who you think the best pure wrestler is right now in mixed martial arts.
Well, I didn't really answer your question the first time there, but I like watching, say, like a George St. Pierre, for example. In terms of, you know, the man really did not have any true wrestling background to him, but he works with a couple Olympic wrestlers from the Canadian Olympic team. He has really well-rounded out his game, and I think that he is probably the most complete fighter on the scene right now. I mean, there's other people that, I mean, they have, you know, devastating skills, all striking wise, but might be a little bit mean, that's what he can do down on the ground, but I mean, but because he's so good at what he does on his feet, well, he's never really been tested on the ground. I refer that to like the stuff, but he's so good with his knees, he's so good with the stand-up striking aspect right there that, you know, he's winning in such a dominant type fashion, but, you know, has not really been, at least I don't think it's been tested down on the underground aspect right there.
So you mentioned George St. Pierre, and on the website right now we have an editorial by James Rowe that's about his belief that George St. Pierre is a lay and pray fighter. Do you agree with that sentiment, that George St. Pierre kind of just holds the guys down a lot, or do you think that he's doing some more strategy besides just holding a guy down?
Well, I mean, you know, that's where, you know, the comment is, okay, you said the comment is, that, is he holding them down? I mean, repeat the actual question for me, if you don't mind, please,
okay.
Matt.
All right, well, basically the article is about James Rowe discussing that he feels that George St. Pierre is a lay-and-pray fighter. So a lot of his fights that he's been winning lately, he's just kind of been holding down the guy, not really looking to finish. So would you agree with that sentiment, or do you think that George St. Pierre is implementing a deeper strategy that a lot of fans aren't necessarily seeing?
No, I'd say there's more to it than just that. I mean, he's, you know, you're utilizing your skills. You know, I mean, that's what the parameter says. I mean, before when Ultimate Fighting Championships or the No Holds Barred era, all it was, the only time you'll be stand up is if there was basically any kind of like a stalemate type situation. You know, but now I actually think they're standing up to fight us a little too soon. Why? It's because either the referee or the organization itself is being dictated by the audience. I don't think a lot of the real things are truly happening, or the true outcomes are happening as matches, because again, they allow the crowd to dictate policy to you. I mean, it's you know, I'll use myself as one of the classic examples. I had a match with Ken Shamrock, match number 2, down in Detroit, Michigan. Now, I guess it all depends on who wrote the article. They looked upon that as one of the most boring matches ever, because it was like about 35 minutes of just dancing in a circle without much actual connected physical interaction. But to me, I look at it as the most, one of the most well thought out psychological matches ever, knowing the fact that it was the largest sellout crowd at that time, up to 10,000 people, knowing that the crowd was not going to win this match. But then to me, it's like, are you going to let that thought affect you or not? And that crowd affected Kinship, or at least to the point that he's even talking to me out there. He's kind of like, come on, come on. And I'm thinking to myself, I can bring it to you. You can bring it to me. I've got nothing but time to kill, because prior to that, it was unlimited time. You know, it was as of, I think, Ultimate.
Yep.
That they introduced the very first time elements. And I think it was then just after that they started to introduce gloves and things of that nature. So like I said, it was a slow process. Most of your listeners won't, they don't even know about the No Holds Barred.
Which is unfortunate.
Most people only know about mixed martial arts probably January 2004, and when the Ultimate Fighter, and when the Ultimate Fighter Company ended up solidifying a slot there with Spike Television, and thus the Ultimate Fighter show came about.
That's definitely
so
true.
A lot of people don't know where the roots of where this came from in the first place. But to me, it's like, there's a whole lot more. And to me, I will not let that crowd dictate policy to me. There's been times when I'm here doing stuff like that, and I'm thinking, this armchair quarterback is trying to tell me what to do here right now from afar. Let him climb into this cage, stare across from me, and when let's fight, and I start moving across towards him, you will see a puddle form at the base of his feet. Because there's a lot of people that can write checks with their mouth that their body is incapable of cashing. I won't ever let the crowd dictate to me. It's like, You know, it's like, I'm in there, I'll conduct business the way I want to. You want to find me there, you're more than welcome to conduct business the way you want to, but you're asked to write checks that you just can't cash.
We just had Dan Severn cut a wrestling promo on the Fight Nerd radio show. This is the greatest day of my life, officially.
Well, no, this is not, no, I'm not. See, this is it. I mean, the comment that you made right there, I don't let too many people in my world. I mean, I'll talk about Dan Severn. That's fine. I don't let too many more people into my personal world. I mean, that's just X-Nay with most people right there. But I get a little bit perturbed about a lot of these little flash and success type individuals. To me, the greatest testimonial is the test of time. Now, for example, Matt, you're conducting this interview. Into the progressive process right here, I'll simply say, I won my first national title in 1972, and you were born when?
I was born in 1984.
That's right. So I always tell people, I have been terrorizing athletes for decades, plural.
That's why Dan Severn is the beast.
I have more amateur wrestling titles than any other amateur wrestler. I have a couple of the major ones that eclipse me, such as Olympic gold medal or something like that. But then when you look at the pugilistic arts, you know, mixed martial arts, stuff like that, the world record was 7 title belts. Got either 18 or 19 at this junction. I started at, 36 years of age, just getting ready to turn 37. You find another human being that walks this planet, dead or alive, that can claim the claims that I have and know that they did it on their own ability. They weren't chemically enhanced. And the other scary part there, man, there's, if you knew how little I trained, that's even the scarier part yet. In a lot of ways, I've wasted a lot of my talent because I've been so busy doing the business aspect. Just into my promo, I guess.
All right. That's very true, though. And as you did mention, a lot of fans came into the sport in about maybe 02, 03, 04, whatever, and don't really know the history of the sport. And that's, I think, a big problem also. And since you brought up UFC 9, I'd like to ask you straight from the horse's mouth. I remember reading in Ken Shamrock's first book, he had said that there were some rules that were implemented that they're saying that there was no closed fist strikes in that event, some other stuff. Can you give us a rundown of what actually happened at UFC 9 that Ken is to this day still complaining about?
Right now, I don't know if I can even set the whole stage correctly for that that time here. All I know is that that was actually the show that took place in Detroit, and the UFC was in court, and I think it came down somewhere around that 5 o'clock hour. This is they were going to allow the event to take place, but they had to fall underneath these regulations. You were not allowed to do this, this, or this. When the referee came into each of our locker rooms to let us know about what the rules were, basically he said that when it came time for the match to take place, if you were to do close fist strikes, you will be warned. If you should continue to strike again, you will be warned. And my question was, how many times do you get away before you're penalized? He goes, listen to me, or Severn. He says, you will be warned. I go, fine. I watched the first match. I saw headbutts. I saw close fist punching. Well, to me, it's like, if Ken wants to cry about it now, all these years later, because he didn't watch what was unfolding before him, well then, I guess I can sit in a crying town. But all I know is I watched what took place. I was willing to be penalized if that was going to happen, and it did not happen.
All right, now we know the rest of the story pretty much. I've always wondered about that too as a fan, you know, what really went down backstage in that that tournament.
Yeah, well, like I said, that's all what I know about it.
I know, I want to bring it back to a comment.
If you ever have a chance to review that, just watch the opening match of that card.
I definitely will. I haven't watched that event in a long time. I remember had not seen that some time. It was a pretty good event. That was the first UFC that actually wasn't a tournament format, in fact.
Oh, was it?
Yep, that was the first one. Yeah. It was just all super fights from that one.
Well, then you probably, well, did you like that the final match or not? I mean, most people did not like it.
Yeah, for me, personally, I felt, you know, like you mentioned, a lot of fans did see it as being a little boring. And I was always wondering, you know, why it was like both you guys just didn't seem to engage all the way. And then I read later on about that rule. So, you know, now it's good to actually hear the full story about it.
Well, that actually had nothing to do with the striking element. And I mean, if you look at a lot of Ken's matches prior to that, he's more or less has been a counter attacker. And I just thought, well, if I just sit back and do what he's doing and no one's engaging each other, it's going to be a rather boring match. Crowd's not going to like this. I mean, there was actually one point in time, I mean, I was booing. They were chanting bullshit, Red Wings, and whatever. There were points where garbage was thrown into the ring itself. Tom McCarthy, I don't know if he did it on his own or if he was given the high sign from someone on the outside to get these guys fighting. He stops the match. Basically, kind of gives us this verbal tweet out there that you guys come to fight. Then doggone it. Well, I didn't say doggone it. He said a few other choice words. Then, by God, fight. You know, he pushes Ken back to his side. He pushed me back, and then I basically said, John, just take your shirt off. We'll make it a triangular death match. I can care less because I wasn't about to change my game plan. Not for the crowd. Not for anybody else. So, you know. I have a game plan. I'll stick to my game plan.
All right, now I want to bring it back to some comments you mentioned earlier about how you say that fans are starting to dictate how the fights go down a little bit. Do you think that, especially now in modern mixed martial arts, a lot of fights are being stood up way too fast? Do you think it's because they're just trying to push the striking element more so than the wrestling and grappling elements?
Sure. Why? Because most people, you got to look at what is the education of the fan base there. When you look at the combination, the education, and then you look at what is the excitement level. Most people, you take anyone, and they will understand a punch, a kick, a knee, a big pickup, and slam. You'll hear great reactions out of the crowd. Most people do not understand the little intricacies of what's taking place down there on the ground. I think more might be understanding what an arm bar is because you see the mechanics of that one. But a lot of them understand some of these chokes and some of these other arm locks and or leg locks that are taking place. And why I always say this is because the audience cannot feel your pain. They can feel your pain when they say punch, kick, then they go slam or something like that. They can feel your pain then. And I said, mark my words, you know, the way that, you know, interactive television, you know, these interactive video games, there'll be one day down the road, you'll be able to play your little whatever PlayStation or Xbox video game, and you'll be able to have the UFC game, and you'll be able to put these little electro patches and all these places on your body, and you put on your little gloves and your goggles and your booty pads, and you can say, hey, who do I want to fight? Do I want to fight Rashad Evans, Rampage Jackson, you know, George St. Pierre? And then all of a sudden, when this on-screen fighter all of a sudden throws that roundhouse kick, you know, the three or four of these little electrodes will be fired, and you'll feel your body just get curled in and over as if you just got kicked right into the rib cage or something like that. I said, that's because you have that right now with so many of these video games that are taking place of how you can interact, but you will have much more advanced games down the road that you will actually be able to feel that pain, and then you'll have a greater understanding, a greater appreciation. I've had matches where I've been out there with guys, and all of a sudden my opponent's tapping out, and the crowd is like, that was bullshit. You know, or they start to question the other guys, you know, in the words of Mick Foley, testicular fortitude. And I'm thinking, but if there was some way that you could have hooked up this electrode of pain from the fighter to that armchair quarterback up in those stands, afterwards he'd be like, dude, you are the man. He says, I couldn't believe that you were telling me that. He says, he'd be saying, I was tapping and crapping my pants up in the stands here, and you still were enduring it all. You are the man. But that's not now. won't be until later that that most will understand terms of compression submissions, total body weight distribution, levers, fulcrums. I mean, most won't, they won't even begin to comprehend what I'm even talking about.
That's unfortunate. A lot of fans are just keyboard warriors, and they'll be the first to admit it. But, you know, hopefully in time, there will be a much better understanding.
Matt, I won't even go. I won't even get into chat rooms anymore. I went on one chat room back in, I think, in, what, 94, 95. Then when I started getting bashed a little bit by these people that wanted to hide behind little alias names and stuff like that, I go, hey, when you want to man up and see if they attach names, I'm like, be my guest. Otherwise, I have no time for this petty stuff like this. I will go, I have better things to do with my time and better people to be doing it with.
Right, now, as somebody who's fought all over the world in many different companies, where do you prefer to fight? Do you like the smaller shows or do you like the bigger shows?
Well, I mean, I've been with them both. I mean, I enjoy the kind of aspect altogether. I like going to places I've never been to before. It's more because I've been there, done that, so I'm looking at different aspects. Even now, when I travel, going to a place, you know, most of the young fighters, all they're doing is thinking about just their match. To me, it's like when I go into a place, I'm going to go and take in a site or something like that, because I don't know if I'm going to make it to that area again. So there is no one place I could say that I would like to be at more than any place else. You know, most people, all they do is they travel from point A, or they've been inside of a gym training or their training facility. Now they head to an actual venue. So to me, the inside of a building is still the inside of a building. I'm pretty much an outdoors type of person. I've got to be outdoors seeing and doing things as opposed to being inside. I always tell people, yeah, I've been to a lot of countries. Well, inside that building still looks like the same inside any other building. But being outside is a world of difference. I mean, well, even doing different things that I've never done before. I mean, in the last couple of months, I've done two things. For example, that I've never done before. Just a couple of weeks ago, I've been out on water a number of times. I had never gone jet skiing. That was a lot of fun. You know, a month prior to that, I jumped out of an airplane. That was a tandem jump. And you talk to a guy that, you know, kind of has a little bit of a phobia about heights in the first place. So that was kind of based on one of my own demons in itself. And it was great. It was exhilarating. So, I mean, it's just like, you know, just between seeing things and doing things. I'm definitely very much, you know, obviously I'm a risk taker for what I've done in my last competition. But again, I like going out there and seeing and doing things on top of that, because most people, they won't leave outside of their state. They may never travel outside the country. I mean, they don't get a chance to see anything. And I think most people, as part of their education, they really should go out and see a little bit more of just the United States and places around the world to really appreciate how good we have it here. Might make us, and then maybe make some of our politicians a little more accountable than what they are.
So travel is one of the big perks of fighting in all these companies, right?
Oh yeah, enjoy it.
All right, now with basically over 100 fights on your record, I know a lot of fans are wondering the same question. When does the word retirement start to creep into Dan Severn's mind?
It's been creeping in for some time now. I will do that eventually, but then I say that eventually, but I mean, if they start that Masters division, maybe I might hang around for a little bit longer after that. I mean, it's, you know, the fact is that because I'm not injured, I'm healthy, I'm capable, so why give up something right now? I mean, I do my homework. I mean, when I have a fight company that tries to contact me, I mean, I'm not about to go out there against someone that thinks that's going to destroy me or something like that. I mean, I'm not going to be physically wrecked into retirement. I plan on living to be a ripe old age of 125, so I want to be active right up until the end.
That's a very long time
so
from
that's
now.
Where I mean that. Why? I mean, most people don't expect too much. They think they're just going to get their the laws of average. I'm not. I expect more. I demand fan more.
I will too from now on. I'm going to look for, I think 200 years. That's what I'm going to shoot for. If you're going for 125, I got to up that.
Well, okay. I'll say good luck to you there, Matt. I hope you're doing the type of things that you should be doing to ensure that.
All right, I got to ask one more big question for him. This has always boggled my mind. The gray shirts. What is the mystery of the gray shirts?
The gray shirt, almost every college or university across the United States, in the athletic department, you are issued a set of grays. And it used to be gray shorts and a gray T-shirt. Now, a lot of schools have started changing just to their school colors in nature, but typically it was, well, at least across into through that mid-70s and stuff like that, and 80s, it was a set of grays. And I used to gauge my workouts by how many shirts I soaked through in the course of a normal workout. Two was average, three was a banner day. And I don't mean just a little bit of rain here or something. I mean soaked through to where you heard that big old splash when it hit. And so to me, a gray shirt should be represented, I'm here, I'm going to go to work. That's all it was. Well, and I'm sad. I didn't have any sponsors in the first place to throw on a gray shirt. I mean, it was a new era for, you know, sports entertainment, if you want to refer to it as that. So, you know, it was still the novel. You know, now you've got all kinds of companies that are jumping on board of these various athletes who want to be part of this explosion of mixed martial arts. So that's where the gray shirt. Lots of people think I've had that asked me a lot, and I think a lot of people think I only own one gray shirt, but I probably have, I don't know, 20, 30, maybe more.
So it's more like shirt. Superman, basically, with all the gray shirts lined up in your closet.
Yeah.
All right, well, if anybody from Hanes or Food Loom is listening, they can contact the Fight Nerd. I'll give you Mr. Severin's information, and you could start sponsoring him and sending him even more gray shirts.
There you go.
I just want to give you one chance. If you don't mind, just let us know where we can find out more information about you and your gym.
I'd say simply by going to danseverin.com. That, it'll look a little bit like a three-ring circus because, I'm involved with a lot of different things. But I think a lot of people will be kind of blown away. I mean, the fact that there's poetry on there that I've written. How many people with my name, Beast, write poetry or, you know, are involved with doing things with juveniles. I mean, I go in there, I do speaking engagements with juveniles. I work with law enforcement. I've done some stuff with the military. You know, amateur wrestling is still the ongoing aspect. I mean, I have a 10,000 square foot training facility. I have a property right here in Coldwater. I mean, I do a lot of different things. I have a very interesting life. My CPA, my attorneys, basically said they've never met anyone quite like me. I've taken all my hobbies and I've turned them into businesses. They know I work a lot, but I like what I do. And not many people can say that.
That's very true. It's fun to live the dream, isn't it?
Oh, I think so. And then to travel on top of it all.
All right. Well, Dan Severin, thank you very much. You can check out danseverin.com for more information. The Beast, thank you for being here today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, man.
Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by the MMA World Expo. Coming October 24th and 25th to the Jacob Javits Center in New York City, check out MMAWorldExpo.com. And by Hoodlum Fight Gear. Fight gear made by fighters for fighters. Check them out at HoodlumFightGear.com. And find MMAGym.com, your online directory for finding the best mixed martial arts gyms all around the United States. Find MMAGym.com. And we are back, and you just heard from Dan the Beast Severin. I was a little surprised by some of his responses, to be honest, and I think a lot of you are probably going to be surprised too. But, you know, this is what the Fight Nerd is all about, giving everybody a fair chance to speak their mind and say what they want. And with that, I want to hear what you guys think about this interview, because Dan had a lot of things to say about fans and the sport itself, so I'd like to hear your reaction to some of Dan's comments. You could send that over to Matt, M-A-T-T, at thefightnerd.com. And I really want to know what's going on in your minds of this interview, because it was pretty explosive, to say the least, I think. Now, with that, we're going to wrap up for this edition of Fight Nerd Radio. So, don't forget to check back on thefightnerd.com this Thursday afternoon for Episode 4 of our Ultimate Fighter 10 blog, which is the only blog on the internet with a fighter from each team, Justin Wren from Team Rashad and Zach Jensen from Team Rampage. Later in the week, Part 4 of our Chris Weidman documentary is going to be released on the site, and we're also going to have a review of a very cool MMA documentary that I guarantee you have never seen before, and a tour of a Sambo school in New York City. We'll see you back here next week. I am the Fight Nerd. Thanks for listening.